Breakups cause people to do all kinds of things. Some shave their heads, some binge-watch House of Cards, and some hit the open road, as in the story we're about to hear. If you've been following To the Best of Our Knowledge the last few months, you'll know we're collaborating with Sipur Israeli, or Israel Story, the This American Life of Israel, now entering its second season in Hebrew. It's one of the most popular radio shows in Israel, and especially now, with all of the depressing news coming from that region, it brings stories that try to humanize and complicate things. This one is from Mishi Harman, the host of Israel Story.
At the end of the summer of 2008, my long-term girlfriend, who I was sure I was going to marry, broke up with me. And one of the things that she said when we were breaking up was that I wasn't flexible enough. And I was just about to move to Cambridge, England to start grad school. And even though I didn't exactly know what she meant, I was completely devastated. It plain old sucked. And really the only thing that I could think about was how to get back together to Natalie. And that's actually not her name. She asked me not to use her real name on the radio, which I think you'll soon understand why. And you know how you kind of think these irrational thoughts? So I signed up to yoga studios and started going to Pilates lessons and stretching every morning. And then one rainy night, I was walking from the archaeology department to my room in Pembroke College, and I suddenly had this idea. I sort of figured it out. And if I really wanted to be flexible and I wanted to show her that I had become flexible, I needed to put myself in some situation where I had no control over what went on. So I rushed to my room and I cut out a cardboard square and scribbled anywhere in these big blue all cap letters. And then just went outside ready to hitchhike to, well, anywhere. Even though this was designed as this sort of no-destination kind of trip, it's hard to shed years of inflexibility in just a second. So I harbored this secret desire that if things went really, really well, I would end up in Seville, in Spain. So, growing up, my brother always told me about his favorite paradox, which is about the barber of Seville who shaves all the men in town who don't shave themselves. And the question is, does he shave himself or not? Because if he does, then he shouldn't, and if he doesn't, then he should. And I was going through all these mind loops about Natalie, and I thought to myself that I really identified with this poor barber, and I really need to go and find this barber and get some tips about life from him. At the beginning, not many people stopped, but I was just standing on the side of these British freeways, and most of the people would slow down, take a look at my sign, kind of smile, and whiz off. My first ride was this Pakistani guy who was refilling soda vending machines, and then I got a ride with these members of a teenage punk band who stopped to rehearse in someone's basement. And then a few days later, I found myself in an all-night internet cafe in London where some gay Moroccan guy stole my Nikon D40 camera, which was highly unfortunate. But I was having a blast because flexibility was like, I was just on a flexibility roll. And Natalie was going to be so, so surprised. I figured that I should really chronicle this journey for her. So I decided that I was going to write her postcards, one postcard every day, to tell her what I was experiencing. But very quickly, I was experiencing way too much for just one postcard. So it became two postcards a day and three postcards and four and sometimes five or six or seven. And I was nuts, but I wasn't crazy. So I knew that she would be completely overwhelmed to receive all these unsolicited postcards from me all the time. So I would just put a stamp on the postcard and put it in my bag and keep it for some future day where I would give her this whole package. And there was another project going on, which was that on the flip side of the anywhere sign, there was an equally important slogan, and it said, "I love you, Natalie." And my idea was to get people along the way to hold up this sign, and I would take a picture of them, and then I would have a world of people expressing my love. So anyway, I got onto this van of Roma people who were going to Holland, who put me onto the ferry from Dover in England to Calais in France. And on the ferry, I went to the truck driver's cafeteria to see if anyone was going to Spain. And there were plenty of people going to Spain. But no one agreed to take me, even though I'd cut my hair, and I didn't at all look like, as my mom would say, a wilde chaya, a wild animal. And the only guy who really agreed to talk to me was this guy called Vladimir, who was this tall guy with dark hair who didn't speak a word of English. And I went to him and I said, Vladimir, where are you going? And he said, Spain. So I said, Spain, that's great. Can I come with you? And he didn't understand what I was saying, so he said yes. And then about half an hour later, I noticed that he took this unexpected left-hand turn into Belgium. And I looked at him and I sort of pointed to the south and said sort of, you know, anxiously, Vladimir, Spain, Spain. And he looked at me completely confused and sort of with deadpan seriousness said, no, no Spain, Ukraine. And I thought to myself that if there was ever a moment to practice my flexibility, this was my moment. So for the next 4 days, Vladimir taught me how to drive his truck. And for the next 4 days, we went on all these sideways because Vladimir was trying to dodge the tolls and didn't talk at all. And then on the Slovenian-Ukrainian border, we were detained for a cell in a day because it turned out that Vladimir's entire truck was full of counterfeit Barbie dolls that he was trying to smuggle into the Ukraine. And then finally, once they realized that I wasn't part of the Barbie doll scheme, they let me go. And I ended up in Moscow, and I was left at the central train station, and I got onto this train, which I didn't totally realize was the Trans-Siberian Railway, which crossed all of Russia, all of frozen Siberia, the Gobi Desert, Mongolia, and ended up 9 days later in Beijing. There were almost no Westerners at all on the train. It was only Russian farmers going from one small village to another. And every night there were these crazy vodka parties in the cabin with like 30 different guys called Boris. And every few hours the train would stop at various different towns to let people on. And often I would run out to the town with my sign and get people to hold it up with the I Love You Natalie sign. The pile of postcards was also growing and growing. And I was kind of thirsty for this wisdom about life. And I had met this weird Canadian hockey fan in some youth hostel in Kiev who quoted Wayne Gretzky, who said, you miss 100% of the shots that you never take. And then a few weeks later, when the train stopped in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, finally a Westerner came aboard, this beautiful Swedish drifter called Lisa, who told me that her life motto came from John Lennon. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And it just so happened that when I got to Beijing, it was the Jewish holiday of Passover. So I went to a Chabad Seder in some huge function room of a hotel. And I sat down next to this really gorgeous Israeli girl. And I was telling her all about my hitchhiking adventure. And she was clearly very, very excited. And then she said, you know what? This is great. Why don't we continue your adventure and hitchhike together to India? And I thought to myself, who needs a degree from Cambridge anyway? And she said, yeah, and we can stop in Tibet and pick up my boyfriend, Udi. And I was like, your boyfriend, Udi? And even I realized that this was a sign. So I hitchhiked to the Beijing airport, and I asked the Chinese travel agent there what the cheapest flight that he had to anywhere west of there that day. So he started typing into his computer, and then he looks up at to me and says that I'm in luck because there's a cheap flight that leaves in a couple of hours and still has room. And I was like, oh, that's great. Where is it to? And he looked down at the computer and looked back up at me and said, to Spain. So I did end up in Seville, and I did go to a barber. He couldn't have been farther from my fantasy. I had imagined this sort of fat, balding, sweaty Spaniard called Juan Carlo o Pedro with this huge mustache, spouting out words of wisdom about life and living within a paradox. But in reality, his name was Mustafa, and he was 20 years old, and he was a new immigrant from Algeria, and he didn't speak any language that I spoke. And the Andalusian music of my fantasy in reality was actually Celine Dion's theme song from Titanic. and he didn't give me any words of wisdom. A few months later, taking up Wayne Gretzky and, I guess, completely ignoring John Lennon, I moved back to the States to be close to Natalie to try to get back together. And on her birthday, I invited her over to my place to present her with this huge labor of love, this album of dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of pictures of people all over the world holding up the sign. A whole world of people expressing my love. And in the drawer, there was a pile of 300 plus postcards in my tiny, tiny handwriting, ready to be presented at the climactic moment of reconciliation. I began by giving Natalie the album, and she opened it up on some random page and sort of smiled and closed the book. And then, at least this is the way I remember it, she got up, put on her coat, and walked to the door. And I said, "Your album." And she looked at me and she said, "Oh, was I supposed to take that?" All this happened many years ago, but this story has become, I guess, my favorite story in life. And I've told it countless times. I've told it basically on every single first date that I go on. It's like my all-star story. You know, when you tell a story so many times, you sort of kind of lose the experience of it actually happening to you. It sort of just becomes a good story. But when I really try to go back and think about what that journey meant to me, I wonder whether I actually became more flexible. I mean, I guess the truth is that I don't know, right? I mean, probably not. But, you know, I think, like, would I do something again like that? I mean, is that just something that someone in their mid-20s does because they're slightly kind of crazy? And I would like to think, yeah, that is kind of the person that I am, this kind of slightly crazy romantic who, you know, hitchhikes to China to try to prove to some girl who then doesn't even take his album that they've become flexible, when, in fact, they haven't become flexible. So, that's that.
That was Mishy Harman. You can find all the other Israel Story pieces we've aired on our website at ttbook.org. And if you like them, tune in to Israel Story's first season in English on the Vox Tablet podcast beginning August 18th.